"I'm sure I wouldn't look good as a pumpkin, dear," said Lily. She waved a hand airily. Magrat rose. "You'd be surprised at the things I can do," said Lily dreamily, as the younger witch drifted smoothly over the flagstones. "You should have tried mirrors yourself, Esme. It does wonders for a soul. I only let the swamp woman survive because her hate was invigorating. I do like being hated, you know. And you do know. It's a kind of respect. It shows you're having an effect. It's like a cold bath on a hot day. When stupid people find themselves powerless, when they fume in their futility, when they're beaten, and they've got nothing but that yawning in the acid pit of their stomachs. Well, to be honest, it's like a prayer. And the stories, to ride on stories, to borrow the strength of them, the comfort of them, to be in the hidden centre of them. Can you understand that, the sheer pleasure of seeing the patterns repeat themselves? I've always loved a pattern. Incidentally, if the Og woman continues to try and sneak up behind me, I shall really let your young friend drift out over the courtyard, and then, Esme, I might just lose interest.
I was just walking about, said Nanny. No law against it.
You changed the story your way, and now I'm going to do it mine, said Lily. And once again, all you have to do is go. Just go away. What happens here doesn't matter. It's a city far away, of which you know little. I'm not totally certain I could out-trick you, she added. But these two, they haven't got the right stuff in them. I could make jam of them. I hope you know that. So tonight I suggest a weatherwax learns to lose.
Granny stood silent for a while, leaning on her useless broom. All right, put her down, she said, and then I'll say you've won.
I wish I could believe that, said Lily.
Oh, but you're the nice one, aren't you? You have to keep your word.
Watch me, said Granny. She walked to the parapet and looked down. The two-faced moon was still bright enough to illuminate the billowing fogs that surrounded the palace like a sea.
Magrat, Githa, she said, sorry about this. You've won, Lily. There ain't nothing I can do. She jumped.
Nanny Og rushed forward and stared over the edge, just in time to see a dim figure vanish in the mists. All three figures left on the tower took a deep breath.
It's a trick, said Lily, to get me off my guard.
It isn't, screamed Magrat, dropping to the stones.
She had her broomstick, said Lily.
It don't work, it won't start, shouted Nanny.
Right, she said, menacingly striding towards the slim shape of Lily. We'll soon wipe that smug look off your face.
She halted as silver pain shot through her body. Lily laughed.
It's true, then, she said. Yes, I can see it in your faces. Esme was bright enough to know she couldn't win. Don't be stupid, and don't point that silly wand at me, Miss Garlick. Old Desiderata would have defeated me long ago if she could. People have no understanding.
We ought to go down there, said Magrat. She might be lying there.
That's it. Be good. It's what you're good at, said Lily as they ran to the stairwell.
But we'll be back, snarled Nanny Og, even if we have to live in the swamp with Mrs. Goggle and eat snakes' heads.
Of course, said Lily, arching an eyebrow. That's what I said. One needs people like you around. Otherwise, one is never quite sure one is still working. It's a way of keeping score.
She watched them disappear down the steps. A wind blew over the tower. Lily gathered up her skirt and walked to the end, where she could see the shreds of mist streaming over the rooftops far below. There were the faint strains of music from the distant carnival dance as it wound its way through the streets. It would soon be midnight, proper midnight, not some cut-price version caused by an old woman crawling around in a clock. Lily tried to see through the murk to the bottom of the tower.
"Really, Esme," she murmured, "you did take losing hard."
Nanny reached out and restrained Magrat as they ran down the spiral stairs.
"Slow down a bit, I should," she said. "But she could be hurt. So could you if you trip."
"Anyway," said Nanny, "I don't reckon Esme is lying in a crumpled heap somewhere. That's not the way she'd go. I reckon she just did it to make sure Lily forgot about us and wouldn't try anything on us. I reckon she thought we were—what was that
Sortian bloke who could only be wounded if you hit him in the right place. No one ever beat him until they found out about it. His knee, I think it was. We're a Sortian knee, right? But we know you have to run really fast to get her broomstick going, shouted Magrat. Yeah, I know, said Nanny. That's what I thought. And now I'm thinking how fast you go when you're dropping. I mean, straight down.
I don't know, said Magrat.
I reckon Esme thought it was worth finding out, said Nanny.
That's what I reckon.
A figure appeared around the bend in the stairs, plodding upwards. They stood aside politely to let it pass.
Wish I could remember what bit of him you had to hit, Nanny said. That's going to be nagging at me all night now.
The heel.
Right. Oh, thanks.
Any time.
The figure continued onwards and upwards.
He had a good mask on, didn't he?
Said Magrat, eventually. She and Nanny sought confirmation in each other's face. Magrat went pale. She looked up the stairs.
I think we should run back up and... she began.
Nanny Ogg was much older.
I think we should walk, she said.
Lady Valentia d'Arrangement sat in the rose garden under the big tower and blew her nose. She'd been waiting for half an hour and she'd had enough. She'd hoped for a romantic tete-a-tete. He'd seemed such a nice man, sort of eager and shy at the same time. Instead, she'd nearly been hit on the head when an old woman on a broom, and wearing what looked, as far as she could see through the blur of speed, like Lady Valentia's own dress, had screamed down out of the mist. Her boots had ploughed through the roses before the curve of her flight took her up again. And some filthy, smelly tomcat kept brushing up against her legs. And it had started off as such a nice evening.
"Hello, your ladyship?"
She looked around at the bushes.
"My name is Casananda,"
said a hopeful voice. Lily Weatherwax turned when she heard the tinkle of glass from within the maze of mirrors. Her brow wrinkled. She ran across the flagstones and opened the door into the mirror world. There was no sound but the rustle of her dress and the soft hiss of her own breathing. She glided into the place between the mirrors. Her myriad selves looked back at her approvingly. She relaxed. Then her foot struck something. She looked down and saw on the flagstones, black in the moonlight, a broomstick lying in shards of broken glass. Her horrified gaze rose to meet a reflection. It glared back at her.
"Where's the pleasure in being the winner if the loser ain't alive to know they've lost?"
Lilith backed away, her mouth opening and shutting. Granny Weatherwax stepped through the empty frame. Lily looked down beyond her avenging sister.
"You broke my mirror!"
"Was this what it was all for, then?" said Granny. "Playing little queens in some damp city, serving stories? What sort of power is that?"
"You don't understand. You've broken the mirror!"
"They say you shouldn't do it," said Granny, "but I reckoned, what's another 7 years' bad luck?"
Image after image shatters all the way around the great curve of the mirror world, the crack flying out faster than light.
"You have to break both to be safe. You've upset the balance."
"Oh, I did."
Granny stepped forward, her eyes two sapphires of bitterness.
"I'm going to give you the hiding our mam never gave you, Lily Weatherwax. Not with magic, not with headology, not with a stick like our dad had. And used a fair bit, as I recall, but with skin. And not because you was the bad one, not because you meddled with stories. Everyone has a path they got to tread. But because, and I want you to understand this properly, after you went, I had to be the good one. You had all the fun. And there's no way I can make you pay for that, Lily, but I'm surely going to give it a try."
"But I'm the good one," Lily murmured, her face pale with shock. "I'm the good one. I can't lose. I'm the godmother. You're the wicked witch, and you've broken the mirror."
Moving like a comet, the crack in the mirrors reaches its furthest point and curves back, speeding down the countless worlds.
"You've got to help me put it... The images must be balanced,"
Lily murmured faintly, backing up against the remaining glass.
"Good, good. Feeding people to stories, twisting people's lives, that's good, is it?"
said Granny.
"You mean you didn't even have fun? If I'd been as bad as you, I'd have been a whole lot worse. Better at it than you'd ever dreamed of."
She drew back her hand. The crack returned towards its point of origin, carrying with it the fleeing reflections of all the mirrors. Her eyes widened, the glass smashed and crazed behind Lily Weatherwax. And in the mirror, the image of Lily Weatherwax turned around, smiled beatifically, and reached out of the frame to take Lily Weatherwax into its arms. Lily. All the mirrors shattered, exploding outwards in 1,000 pieces from the top of the tower, so that just for a moment it was wreathed in twinkling fairy dust. Nanny Ogg and Magrat came up onto the roof like avenging angels after a period of lax celestial quality control. They stopped. Where the maze of mirrors had been were empty frames. Glass shards covered the floor, and lying on them was a figure in a white dress. Nanny pushed Magrat behind her and crunched forward cautiously. She prodded the figure with the toe of her boot.
"Let's throw her off the tower," said Magrat. "All right," said Nanny. "Do it, then."
Magrat hesitated.
"Well," she said, "when I said let's throw her off the tower, I didn't mean me personally throwing her off. I meant that if there was any justice, she ought to be thrown off."
"Then I shouldn't say any more on that score if I was you," said Nanny, kneeling carefully on the crunching shards. "Besides, I was right. This is Esme. I know that for years anyway. Take off your petticoat."
"Why?"
"Look at her arms, girl." Magrat stared, then she raised her hands to her mouth.
"What has she been doing?"
"Trying to reach straight through glass by the looks of it," said Nanny. "Now get it off and help me tear it into strips, and then go and find Mrs. Goggle and see if she's got any ointments and can help us, and tell her if she can't, she'd better be a long way away by morning."
Nanny felt Granny Weatherwax's wrist.
"Maybe Lily Weatherwax could make jam of us, but I'm damn sure I could knock Mrs. Goggle's eye out with the fender if it came to it."
Nanny removed her patent indestructible hat and fished around inside the point. She pulled out a velvet cloth and unwrapped it, revealing a little cachet of needles and a spool of thread. She licked a thread and held a needle against the moon, squinting.
"Oh, Esme, Esme," she said as she bent to her sewing, "you do take winning hard."
Lily Weatherwax looked out at the multi-layered silvery world.
"Where am I?"
"Inside the mirror."
"Am I dead?"
"The answer to that," said Death, "is somewhere between no and yes."
Lily turned and a billion figures turned with her.
"When can I get out?"
"When you find the one that's real."
Lily Weatherwax ran on through the endless reflections. A good cook is always the first one into the kitchen every morning and the last one to go home at night. Mrs. Pleasant damped down the fires. She did a quick inventory of the silverware and counted the tureens. She was aware of being stared at. There was a cat in the doorway. It was big and grey. One eye was an evil yellow-green, the other one pearly white. What remained of its ears looked like the edge of a stamp. Nevertheless, it had a certain swagger and generated an I-can-beat-you-with-one-paw feel that was strangely familiar. Mrs. Pleasant stared at it for a while. She was a close personal friend of Mrs. Goggle and knew that shape is merely a matter of deeply ingrained personal habit, and if you're a resident of Genua around Samedi Nuit Mort, you must learn to trust your judgment rather more than you trust your senses. "Well now," she said, with barely a trace of a tremor in her voice, "I expect you'd like some more fish legs. I mean, heads. How about that?"
Gribo stretched and arched his back.
"And there's some milk in the cool room," said Mrs. Pleasant. Gribo yawned happily. Then he scratched his ear with his back leg. "Humanity's a nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there." It was a day later.
"Mrs. Goggle's healing ointment really seems to work," said Magrat. She held up a jar that was half full of something pale green and strangely gritty, and had a subtle smell which you could quite possibly believe occupied the whole world.
"It's got snakes' heads in it," said Nanny Ogg.
"Don't you try to upset me," said Magrat. "I know the snake's head is a kind of flower, a fritillary, I think. It's amazing what you can do with flowers, you know."
Nanny Ogg, who had in fact spent an instructive, if gruesome, half-hour watching Mrs. Goggle make the stuff, hadn't the heart to say so.
"That's right," she said. "Flowers. No getting anything past you, I can see that."
Magrat yawned. They'd been given the run of the palace, although no one felt like running anywhere. Granny had been installed in the next room. "Go and get some sleep," said Nanny. "I'll go and take over from Mrs. Goggle in a moment."
"But, Nanny, Githa," said Magrat.
"Hmm?"
"All that stuff she was saying when we were travelling. It was so cold, wasn't it? Not wishing for things, not using magic to help people, not being able to do that fire thing. And then she went and did all those things. What am I supposed to make of that?"
"Ah, well," said Nanny, "it's all according to the general and the specific, right?"
"What does that mean?"
Magrat lay down on the bed. "Means when Esme uses words like everyone and no one, she does not include herself."
"You know, when you think about it, that's terrible.
That's witchcraft, up at the sharp end. And now get some sleep." Magrat was too tired to object. She stretched out and was soon snoring in a genteel sort of way. Nanny sat and smoked her pipe for a while, staring at the wall. Then she got up and pushed open the door. Mrs. Goggle looked up from her stool by the bed.
"You go and get some sleep too," said Nanny. "I'll take over for a spell."
"There's something not right," said Mrs. Goggle. "Her hands are fine. She just won't wake up."
"It's all in the mind with Esme," said Nanny.
"I could make some new gods and get everyone to believe in them real good. How about that?"
said Mrs. Goggle. Nanny shook her head.
"I shouldn't think Esme'd want that. She's not keen on gods. She thinks they're a waste of space."
"I could cook up some gumbo then. People'll come a long way to taste that."
"Hmm, might be worth a try," Nanny conceded. "Every little helps, I always say. Why not see to it? Leave the room here."
After the voodoo lady had gone, Nanny smoked her pipe some more and drank a little rum in a thoughtful sort of way, looking at the figure on the bed. Then she bent down close to Granny Weatherwax's ear and whispered,
"You ain't going to lose, are you?"
Granny Weatherwax looked out at the multi-layered silvery world.
"Where am I?"
"Inside the mirror."
"Am I dead?"
"The answer to that," said Death, "is somewhere between no and yes."
Esme turned and a billion figures turned with her.
"When can I get out?"
"When you find the one that's real."
"Is this a trick question?"
"No."
Granny looked down at herself.
"This one," she said.
And stories just want happy endings. They don't give a damn who they're for.
"Dear Jason, etc. Well, so much for Genua, but I learned about Mrs. Goggle's zombie medicine, and she gave me the told me how to make banana nana nana daiquiri, and gave me a thing called a banjo. You'll be amazed. And all in all, is a decent soul, I reckon, if you keeps her where you can see her. It looks like we got Esme back, but I don't know. She's acting funny and quiet, not like herself normally, so I'm keeping an eye on her just in case Lily pulled a fast one in the mirror. But I think she's getting better, because when she woke up, she asked Magrat for a look at the wand, and then she kind of twiddled and twisted them rings on it, and turned the paw into a bunch of flowers. And Magrat said she could never make the wand do that, and Esme said no, because she wasted time wishing for things instead of working out how to make them happen. What I say is, what a good job Esme never got a wand when she was young. Lily would have been a picnic by comparison. Enclosed is a picture of the cemetery here. You can see folks are buried in boxes above ground, the soil being so wet, because you don't want to be dead and drowned at the same time. They say travelling broadens the mind. I reckon I could pull mine out my ears now and knot it under my chin. All the best, Mum."
In the swamp, Mrs. Goggle, the voodoo witch, draped the tailcoat over its crude stand, stuck the hat on top of the pole, and fastened the cane to one end of the crosspiece with a bit of twine. She stood back. There was a fluttering of wings. Legba dropped out of the sky and perched on the hat. Then he crowed. Usually he only crowed at nightfall because he was a bird of power, but for once he was inclined to acknowledge the new day. It was said afterwards that every year on Samedi Nuit Mort, when the carnival was at its height and the drums were loudest and the rum was nearly all gone, a man in a tailcoat and a top hat, and with the energy of a demon, would appear out of nowhere and lead the dance. After all, even stories have to start somewhere. There was a splash, and then the waters of the river closed again. Magrat walked away. The wand settled into the rich mud, where it was touched only by the feet of the occasional passing crawfish, who didn't have fairy godmothers and aren't allowed to wish for anything. It sank down over the months, and passed, as most things do, out of history, which was all anyone could wish for. The three broomsticks rose over Genua with the mists that curled towards the dawn. The witches looked down at the green swamps around the city. Genua dozed. The days after fat lunchtime were always quiet, as people slept it off. Currently, they included Gribo, curled up in his place among the bristles. Leaving Mrs. Pleasant had been a real wrench.
"Well, so much for La Dusha Vita," said Nanny philosophically.
"We never said goodbye to Mrs. Goggle," said Magrat.
"I reckon she knows we're going, right enough," said Nanny. "Very knowing woman, Mrs. Goggle."
"But can we trust her to keep her word?" said Magrat.
"Yes," said Granny Weatherwax.
"She's very honest in her way," said Nanny Ogg.
"Well, there's that," Granny conceded. "Also, I said I might come back."
Magrat looked across at Granny's broomstick. A large round box was among the baggage strapped to the bristles.
"You never tried on that hat she gave you," she said.
"I had a look at it," said Granny coldly. "It don't fit."
"I reckon Mrs. Goggle wouldn't give anyone a hat that didn't fit," said Nanny. "Let's have a look, eh?"
Granny sniffed and undid the lid of the box. Balls of tissue paper tumbled down towards the mists as she lifted the hat out. Magrat and Nanny Ogg stared at it. They were, of course, used to the concept of fruit on a hat. Nanny Ogg herself had a black straw hat with wax cherries on for special family feuding occasions, but this one had rather more than just cherries. About the only fruit not on it somewhere was a melon.
"It's definitely very foreign," said Magrat.
"Go on," said Nanny. "Try it on."
Granny did so, a bit sheepishly, increasing her apparent height by 2 feet, most of which was pineapple.
"Very colourful, very stylish," said Nanny. "Not everyone could wear a hat like that."
"The pomegranates suit you," said Magrat.
"And the lemons," said Nanny Ogg.
"Eh? You two ain't laughing at me, are you?" said Granny Weatherwax suspiciously.
"Would you like to have a look?" said Magrat. "I have a mirror somewhere."
The silence descended like an axe. Magrat went red. Nanny Ogg glared at her. They watched Granny carefully.
"Yes," she said, after what seemed a long time. "I think I should look in a mirror."
Magrat unfroze, fumbled in her pockets, and produced a small wooden-framed hand mirror. She passed it across. Granny Weatherwax looked at her reflection. Nanny Ogg surreptitiously manoeuvred her broomstick a bit closer.
Said
Granny after a while.
"It's the way the grapes hang over your ear," said Nanny, encouragingly.
"You know, that's a hat of authority if ever I saw one."
"Don't you think?" said Magrat.
"Well," said Granny, grudgingly, "maybe it's fine for foreign parts, where I ain't going to be seen by anyone as knows me. No one important, anyway.
And when we get home, you can always eat it," said Nanny Ogg.
They relaxed. There was a feeling of a hill climbed, a dangerous valley negotiated. Magrat looked down at the brown river and the suspicious logs on its sandbanks.
"What I want to know is," she said, "was Mrs. Goggle really good or bad? I mean, dead people and alligators and everything."
Granny looked at the rising sun poking through the mists.
"Good and bad is tricky," she said. "I ain't too certain about where people stand. Perhaps what matters is which way you face. You know," she added, "I truly believe I can see the edge from here."
"Funny thing," said Nanny, "they say that in some foreign parts you get elephants. You know, I've always wanted to see an elephant. And there's a place in Clatch, or somewhere, where people climb up ropes and disappear."
"What for?" said Magrat.
"Search me. There's probably some cunning foreign reason."
In one of Desiderata's books, said Magrat, she says that there's a very interesting thing about seeing elephants. She says that on the Stow Plains, when people say they're going to see the elephant, it means they're simply going on a journey because they're fed up with staying in the same place.
It's not staying in the same place that's the problem, said Nanny. It's not letting your mind wander.
I'd like to go up towards the hub, said Magrat, to see the ancient temples such as are described in Chapter 1 of The Way of the Scorpion.
And they'd teach you anything you don't know already, would they? Said Nanny, with unusual sharpness.
Magrat glanced at Granny.
Probably not, she said meekly.
Well, said Nanny, what's it to be, Esme? Are we going home, or are we going off to see the elephant?
Granny's broomstick turned gently in the breeze.
"You're a disgusting old baggage, Gither Og," said Granny.
"That's me," said Nanny, cheerfully.
"And Magrat Garlic?"
"I know," said Magrat, overwhelmed with relief. "I'm a wet hen."
Granny looked back towards the hub and the high mountains. Somewhere back there was an old cottage with the key hanging in the privy. All sorts of things were probably going on. The whole kingdom was probably going to rack and ruin without her around to keep people on the right track. It was her job. There was no telling what stupidities people would get up to if she wasn't there.
Nanny kicked her red boots together idly.
"Well, I suppose there's no place like home," she said.
"No," said Granny Weatherwax, still looking thoughtful. "No, there's a billion places like home, but only one of them's where you live."
"So we're going back," said Magrat.
"Yes."
But they went the long way and saw the elephant.
That is the end of Witches Abroad by Terry Pratchett, and it was read by Nigel Planer.